Three messages before we get started. First, do you need a single phone number that comes with multiple extensions so anyone who works at your company can be reached no matter where they are? Go to grasshopper.com. It's the virtual phone system that entrepreneurs love. Next, does anyone you know need a beautiful online store that actually increases sales but is easy to set up and manage? Send them to shopify.com, the platform that top online stores are running on right now. Finally, do you need a lawyer who actually understands the startup world that you and I live in? Go to walkercorporatelaw.com. I've known Scott Edward Walker for years, so tell him you're a friend of mine and he'll take good care of you. Here's the program. Hey there, freedom fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And I'm laughing because I recorded an interview with Joe Griffin about how he sold his company and how he built it before and so on. And as I was researching it and doing the interview, I realized he started a bigger company after the one that I'm talking to him about. And you guys know that my goal here is to talk to entrepreneurs about how they built their big successes, not the small five and dime store on the corner, not the small pizzeria that's a lifestyle business where they're just scraping by, but, you know, the big successes, the ones that really inspire us and push us to do bigger. So then when I realized that I didn't interview him about his biggest success, I said, Joe, let's do a second interview. He was gracious enough to say yes. We both took a three-minute break, and then we came right back here to talk about his current business. Joe is the co-founder of iAcquire, which offers digital brand strategy and marketing service engagements for SEO, reputation management, content marketing, digital public relations, and social media marketing. It looks like we scraped this intro together so quickly that I probably just copied it off of my research, which copied it off of your website. But Joe, in a word, you do online marketing and reputation management for big companies, and thanks for coming here to talk about the business.
You got it. Thanks for having me again.
The aha moment that led you to launch iAcquire after you sold a business successfully was you told me there was this big talent pool that you saw was available. Why was there suddenly a big talent pool?
So in 2008, that year, the year before, and then even leading into 2009, there was a series of acquisitions that were underway or that had recently been completed. And there was a pretty big glut of opportunity just in those companies, either that were going through that process or those that had recently gone through that process. And it was also a time where there was a lot of, and just like there is right now, the rapidness of the change was exciting. And I think a lot of people were looking to do new things. And so I felt that it was really the right time to start a new business. Personally, it was. But also just in the market, the timing was right. And then my business partner, Jay Swanson, who we could talk about as well and how that came to be. But, he felt that same way. So the timing really was good.
And it was search engine optimization companies that you noticed were starting to get acquired?
So it was everything. So SEO companies, also just interactive agencies, like iCrossing as an example. 360i was buying companies and had also been recently acquired by a larger group. So there was a lot of firms out there that just a lot of shakeup going on, and when those things occur, sometimes some of the talented people are going to be open to looking at new opportunities.
And you were in that space because you sold your company to iCrossing, and you noticed that there were people who were unhappy with what was going on. Without giving me a name of a person, can you describe someone who talked to you about, hey, this isn't life the way I wanted it to be?
Yeah, I think that. a few different people, in fact. I think the general sentiment was that I wouldn't say it was that people were unhappy necessarily, although probably some of that too, but I think people just wanted to be a part of something that was innovative and young, and something, a company that, you know, really believed in the culture of the business. And I think that's what's fun about startups is that you have that opportunity to do things a little differently. And for us, it was just, and it still is, about being more agile, leveraging technology, and really getting the best people we can possibly get. And that's the culture we have. And have fun and work hard. You know, work hard, play hard is deeply ingrained in what we do.
So, Joe, I see the opportunity there to hire these people. What I don't yet understand is, Where's the opportunity on the customer side? What were customers so eager for that you said, yes, I now have the people who can give it to them?
Well, I think that what a lot of the large brands saw and continue to see is that these larger agencies, and you know, this is something that we have to be very careful about as we grow, is a bit of a depersonalized experience, number one. And then number two, as you start to get too large, it becomes difficult to be nimble. And obviously with, you know, digital is all about how nimble can you be, how smart and efficient can you be, and even things like leveraging social media, proper SEO strategy and current SEO strategy are things that were not being employed by a lot of these larger agencies. And so we said, you know,
for example, I want to be more specific. I started out this interview by just reading a bunch of marketing phrases: reputation management, marketing service, engagement for SEO. Give me something specific that the bigger companies couldn't do that a younger, more nimble company could do, it that it was so powerful that made you say, I can build a business around this. What's one specific thing that a younger company could do?
Sure. So one thing that we did as an example is we took advantage of off-page SEO, which is link building. And we said, how can we do, you know, what types of link building services can we offer these big brands that they don't have the bandwidth to do in-house and that they don't have the potentially the expertise even to understand how to do it, or if they did understand how to do it, not have the right types of partners that they could go to that could do that work for them. And so
who would you go to for link building for a bigger company?
Who would we approach?
Yeah.
What
was your process?
So for us, it's, you know, pretty much any website, and especially large brands, when it comes to, you know, search engine rankings, obviously the backlink portfolio of a website, is going to be a major indicator of that website's trust. And ultimately, you know, how that website's going to rank for keywords. And so a lot of these big brands were doing things. Some did things properly on their site, but most still don't. But had very little or no off-site strategy to get new websites to link to them. And that means that they weren't thinking about things like content marketing, which is one of our core services that we offer, in terms of how can we leverage content in a way that is compelling, in a way that other websites on the internet want to pick up our content and link back to our clients.
So one of the things that we're going to do is create content for your customers and get it out on other sites.
Correct. Create content for them, repurpose content they already have. They might have buyer's guides. They could have, you know, data studies that they've done. So whether it's creating, you know, article type content or creative pieces, whether it be video, or motion graphics or infographics.
Companies at the time that were already doing that? That doesn't seem that innovative to get backlinks through content marketing. That was being done throughout the early 2000s, no?
Yeah, it was being done, but it wasn't being done at scale. And you know, we felt that the companies that were doing it, you know, were limited in their scope. And and certainly there were companies doing it. But typically it was a small division underneath a underfunded SEO group inside of a big agency that was attempting to do it. It just doesn't have the resources.
I see. But on the smaller scale, there were smaller mom and pop. It was usually like two brothers or two buddies who were going to really aggressively get you links. And you're saying on the bigger scale for bigger companies, that didn't exist. Those hustlers weren't there for them.
That's right. And when you're working with these larger brands, there are, you know, financial or their legal compliances you have to deal with. And there's a lot of different things that you have to go through. So you have to have a tight process. You have to have a good process. And you need the right types of technology and reporting, and the way that you communicate has to be different. So us taking that off-page SEO and content marketing approach, and you know, I used the word polished in our last interviews, but polishing that and preparing that in a way that was consumable for the enterprise, you know, businesses was a really great market opportunity for us. But it provided those brands something that they need.
When I interviewed you about how you sold, what happened after you sold Submit a Website, your previous business, you told me that, well, one thing I had the opportunity to do was invest in other companies. So I'm curious about how that went for you. A lot of entrepreneurs sell a company and then they become angel investors, and then hopefully in there,
sure,
sometimes they go on to become bigger investors or create incubators.
Yep.
How did it work for you?
So I started an incubator.
You did?
I did start an incubator, which was in a couple other friends as well. But in that incubator, for me, was a little bit of a part-time project. I just kind of did it for fun. For me, really, it was just do it for fun, try to help other people out, and then I could take some equity, obviously, with me in the event that I get involved in the next Facebook or something like that. But I started a couple things. I helped a couple friends out with some businesses. I did make a few investments into some businesses that I felt had some opportunity. And, you know, I didn't hit any Facebooks, no Facebook-type opportunities, but iAcquire obviously was one of those initial startups, and so from that perspective, you know, iAcquire is absolutely the big win, but a couple other little break evens and some losses too.
Okay, why didn't you continue? Why didn't you say I'm going to get better and better at this? This is going to be my thing. I'll impart what I know about marketing to these guys. I'll impart what I know about business, and I'll cultivate as many of these hustlers as possible, and they'll do the big work, and I'll cash out years later.
So, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, an incubation business is hard. And one thing I've found over time is that, especially, you know, when you get into partnerships, and I've been in several partnerships, partnerships are hard, and it goes back to my father and I and the difficulty there. And it's hard to have business partners, you know, and so that can be tricky, and it depends on there's a right way to do it. Obviously, like Y Combinator, as an example, has done a great job of it. There's also a company called Techstars that's done really well. And then obviously, you know, Kickstarter has done amazing. And so there's companies out there that are doing it really well. But I've typically, most of the time when I, you know, look at companies that are incubators, it's tricky. So it's a tricky business. And I think, I don't know if that was for me. You have to deal with a lot of business owners, a lot of guys that, you know, are strapped for cash. There's constantly dealing with investors. So it, in a lot of ways it's fun, but I think what it is more is that I just have a passion for what I do now. And ultimately I wanted to just get back into it because I love helping companies succeed online. I want to be all over search, all over social, reputation management, digital strategy, content marketing. Those things are just exciting and fun. And I like to play in that sector.
You also dabbled in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of investments do you make there?
So at one point I had maybe six or seven properties personally that were investment properties. I was able to sell most of those. I still have a couple. But that was just another investment. The real and that was a, you know, not the best timing either.
You know what? I get the I know that those two directions aren't for me. Investing in startups isn't. Once I even start getting all the legal paperwork, I think, yep, I don't want to be in this business. Same thing with real estate. I don't want to deal with tenants. I know when my landlords are really nice, I still wouldn't want to, and I'm a really good tenant, I still wouldn't want to be my own landlord and be in their shoes. How did you know that iAcquire, that doing consulting services for bigger businesses was your thing? Was this the big passion in life? No one grows up saying, I want to do that. How did you know that this felt right, that this is a marriage?
Well, for me, and you make a funny comment that and you're right, typically people don't grow up, but in some ways, I kind of did grow up with this. I mean, my first real job was working with my dad and submit a website, and that was a search engine marketing business. So I've been in the search engine marketing business for 14 years. And it's what I know and it's what I do. And I really love it. And I love the people. And for iAcquire, I mean, the reason why iAcquire has been so successful, there's probably several reasons, but it really comes down to having the right people, which is one of the reasons why my great friend and business partner, Jay Swanson, you know, why he and I got along so well is we really believed that we get the right people together. You know, our thought was, let's attract the best talent that we can. Let's just go headhunt the best talent. Let's put ourselves out there. Let's be bold. And let's tell people that come join our organization and together we'll build a $100 million agency and we'll be the next big interactive agency. And that's exactly what we're doing.
Where are you now? What size revenue?
So revenues... probably wouldn't reveal too much, but we're above $10 million a year.
Let me make that clear. You're above $10 million a year. You won't allow me to say what I have here on my screen, but we can't say above $10 million a year.
Sure.
In sales. What kind of margins do you have in a business where it's all dependent on employees and personal touch with your customers? What's the net margin on a business like this?
Yeah, so it's not, I mean, this is not the business that has the 50% profit margin. Right. There's slimmer margins in a business like this. And, you know, you do a business like this not because you're not looking to squeeze, you know, a ton of money out of every dollar. You know, if you can end up in a place where you're making a little bit of money, you're doing pretty good. But this is a business that has a lot of scale. So it's not a high margin business, but there's a lot of scale in the business, and ultimately there's a lot of opportunity in the bottom line as you scale.
Is it more than 10% that ends up in the bottom line?
So it depends. It depends on where you're at in your life cycle. What stage are you at in your business? For us, we are not in our position is not that we want to try to maximize the bottom line as much as it is we want to grow our business and our capabilities and scale the company. So for us, we really try to take our revenues and take our dollars and plug them back into technology and back into headcount and back into growth. So we're very much interested in growing the business.
All right. Thanks for being open about the revenues. Sure. To the extent that you could be. I think it's helpful to get a sense of the size of the business, to get a sense of where you've come in the last, what's been now 3 years. So less actually, I think, than 3 years. So you now know the team, you know what you're going to be building, you know what your unique selling opportunity is. Where do you get your first customer?
So fortunately, both myself and my business partner have been in the space so long, we've got a lot of relationships and contacts. And so, you know, we reached out to people that we knew had an appetite for SEO and people that we knew were looking to, people that wanted a better service. And there's a lot of people out there today.
How did you know about these people?
Just from being in this space so long. So from being in the business so long, going to conferences, personally managing accounts, personally doing sales, talking to people, networking, reaching out to people cold. And so all the different things that you do to network in a business, you know, it's driven a lot of relationships over the years for myself and Jay. And we've been able to tap into those relationships and expand upon those relationships. And
who's the first customer? Sorry to interrupt. The reason that I do this, Joe, is because and I'm saying it as I'm apologizing as much to you as to the audience who in the comments when I interrupt at all will say, Andrew, stop interrupting. Let the guy talk. I've found that stories become much easier to grasp when they're specifics. If you tell me about how you get most of your customers, people kind of hear it. But if you tell me about that story of how you got the one customer, it really puts an image in their head and an understanding about your business. So I thought we could start with the first. Where'd you get the first customer?
So our first customer, I think our first customer was actually a relationship that Jay and I both had, who's a friend of ours actually, and at a company called Break Media, and Break.com and some sister sites. And, you know, we had that relationship. We reached out to him and said, hey, we got a new business, and we think we can help you guys from a consulting perspective and help you better structure your site, help you think about SEO in a way that would bring, you know, more traffic into your site. And these guys have, you know, this is a content company, video and content. So,
and they get search engine optimization. Oh, they get that whole idea of
very, yeah. Search, links. Social. I mean, they're, you know, the type of social sharing that they get on a daily basis is, you know, it's exorbitant. So yeah, they're
how did you totally know them?
Digital. I think we had met at probably a conference. Yeah. I mean, I tried to go to these search engine conferences, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 a year, and you know, you know, 8 or 9 years passes by, and you know, you meet a lot of people.
And is this the head? Is this Keith Richman at Break, who you knew, or someone?
This
worked
was with? It's actually Baron, a guy named Baron Ginetti. Okay.
And so you knew these are guys who are willing to take chances, who are willing to try something new, who are open to new ideas.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. I mean, and that company in particular. I mean, they are, you know, on the cusp of developing great content every day. That's what they do. And they do that across, you know, probably a couple hundred different properties. And Baron's a guy that gets search. He runs search over there. And I mean, he knows what he's doing. So it's not like he has to use us. And he can build a lot of those competencies in-house. And he does have a lot of those competencies in-house. But I think because of that relationship, we're able to say, hey, we have a unique value proposition. Let's talk about what we can do. And ultimately, through some consulting and assistance, we were able to help him increase that exposure that they already have, which was pretty significant, but continue to make that better.
What's the first work that you guys did for Break?
I think it was a consulting project, just helping them to structure their website in a way that makes it more friendly and more conducive for search.
So even Break needs help structuring their website? I feel like they totally get how to structure the website for sharing or search.
Yeah, no, they do. Yeah, they're. I mean, they are, you know, those guys are one of the most, they've got their act together better than just about anyone else out there in their space. Mm-hmm. And like I said, Baron, who runs their team, is one of the top in-house SEOs. So they know how to structure, but it's always good to get a second set of eyes on it. I mean, you can miss things. You can miss internal linking. You could have, duplicated pages that might be occurring. You might have, you might be overusing, H1 tags or image alts or who knows. So it's good to get a second pair of eyes in there and make sure you're doing things right.
Okay. I see, as I said in our previous interview, that on your website there are a bunch of lead generating opportunities, not just lead generating opportunities, but sticky ones. I can give you my email address in return for something, and then we can connect, and hopefully I'll become one of your customers. At what point did you start adding those?
So I think our first, so Link Diagnosis, which is one of our tools, linkdiagnosis.com, we launched that tool. That tool actually launched before I acquired .com. So that was a tool that we had kind of worked on behind mm-hmm. the scenes, launched and used to generate leads, even before the company officially was formed. So it was kind of a pre-lead generator. But it wasn't just to generate leads. It's also to contribute value to the SEO community. And that's what a lot of those guides are. And even though we do look for a tweet or an email to download that information, if we can market to you, we probably will. But we also, we want you on our newsletter. We want to connect with you. And, we believe in staying in touch with the community and adding value to the community, even if we don't directly get value back. But by doing that, obviously, you increase your brand exposure and you get more word of mouth business and build that trust out there.
How effective was Link Diagnosis when you first launched it?
It's very effective. It's very effective. I mean, today it gets probably 20 or 30,000 visitors a month. So it's got a decent, it's got a decent traffic base. Mm-hmm. And it's not a huge lead gen for us, although we do get leads from it, but it's a little, gem in the SEO community. It's a tool that a lot of people like and it helps them do their job.
All right. So you launched with that. How did you get the word out about it?
So I believe that the site, we were able to get it ranked well. So, people looking for link building type tools, it ranked well. And then we also just did a lot of PR. So we went out and contacted webmasters. We contacted editors in particular that worked at some of the different search engine, publications and let them know about it. And so it was a pretty viral spread once it started to get out.
Okay. All right. So it's the tool. It's friends. What else were you using to bring in new customers?
So again, early on, especially, it was literally just pick the phone up and let's call our contacts. Let's, the people that we know in the industry. It's just word of mouth. It's, hey, let's, really just talking to people. I mean, again, getting back to some of the connections that we had, pick the phone up, call them, tell them about what you're doing and see if they're interested. And so, Jay and I in particular did, all the sales for the first, year and a half. That we started the business. And then ultimately, eventually we started bringing in our own sales team and cultivating an outbound sales force that could do that at more scale.
Outbound to who?
So our target customer is going to be anyone that's in the financial services sector, the technology space, B2B, entertainment, automotive. And typically when we outbound and target companies, we're targeting companies that have annual revenues of $100 million or greater.
And how do you know who to talk to at those companies to get them to sign up?
So depending on the size of the company, there could be sometimes there's an SEO director. Depending on the company and the size of the company, there's going to be a search engine. There could be a search engine marketing director or like a VP of online marketing or a CMO. So there's different levels. Mm-hmm. And depending on the approach that we're taking with different companies, so depending on the company, we might prospect that company a little differently depending on what their need states are. One of the things that we try to do a good job of is identifying where they're weak. So we find that, hey, you're weak in these areas. And based on the areas where they're weak, that's going to help us understand the audience we need to speak to internally.
I see. What's the biggest weakness that you notice? What's a common one?
So companies don't do a good job, you know, just first and foremost of optimizing their websites still. I know it sounds simple, but they don't. And a lot of these big agencies are on very, what I would consider, legacy CMS systems. And I won't name any because I don't want to throw them under the bus, but there's a lot of CMS systems out there that don't allow you to properly, you know, optimize your website.
So do you move them over to one that does?
We'll help them to transition their CMS. Oftentimes that's already in the plans, and we come in as a strategic advisor and consultant to help them make that transition. And sometimes we'll help them find areas, even it could be as simple as there could be advanced settings sometimes in those CMS that need to be turned on. And it could be that there are third-party plugins or tools that can plug into those systems to make them more search engine friendly. Mm-hmm. So companies still are, you know, we find that they're on some of these older systems. I think one of the biggest areas where they're still lacking and something that we put front and center in everything that we do is what we call audience analysis. And that's helping them understand who their customers are, the different types of customers that they have coming into their website, and how are they actually communicating with those customers. Because we're not just trying to build content for search engines, we're also building content for people. Mm-hmm. So we find a lot of times companies may, you know, they may be communicating with their customers in a way that doesn't actually resonate with their customers. And so we can help people to improve time on site. We can help them to improve the number of page views that a person would visit on their site. And those things actually also impact search. So, you know, Google's looking at what's the bounce rate now. So if someone hits your site and they leave in 14 seconds on average and go back to Google, that's not a very good, that's not necessarily the experience that Google's looking for. Unless maybe it's you know, someone's looking to dictionary.com or something where they might have a different expectation for time on site. But yeah, definitely the audience that they're speaking to, the way they're communicating, the way their site is structured, and even simple things like keyword analysis. I mean, we find all the time that as you start navigating through a company's website, even their top level pages, that they've not done a good job either of thinking about or integrating the different keywords that are relevant to those pages. So it's still simple stuff. But you know, there's still a rampant somewhat dysfunction organizationally where the companies aren't doing it right. And a lot of it is there's a lot of people internally that know how to do it, but sometimes you have to speak to a company in a way that that you know, works for them internally. And that might mean that we have to prepare special types of deliverables that can maybe we could put in the hands of their CTO that can help them build an internal case for why
like
they
what? Act.
So as an example, and let's use the CMS example, you could be an SEO director that hates the CMS that you work on every day and you can't stand it, but you don't have any your ability to formally communicate the value proposition for why you guys need to not only spend the money to move to a CMS, but the time and get those resources, that can be very difficult for an in-house SEO to do. Because we've done things like that so many times, we've been able to build, you know, deliverables and consulting pieces, and we've got somewhat of an artillery of ammunition and material that we can provide people to help them sell this stuff internally. Because
I see. So now you've given them a research and the credibility to be able to say, we need to invest money in updating it.
That's one of the primary things we do. That's the, on the strategy side, consulting side, helping them understand that global strategy, you know, where that work needs to occur on their site, and then how do you go about actually making it happen, and tactically, you know, what needs to be done to do it. And we'll do the strategy, and we'll do the market research, and we'll actually develop those deliverables, and then we'll also do the work. So we'll come in and actually write the content, and write the meta tags, and write the rich snippets. And optimize their YouTube channel as an example. So we do everything that relates to search, we do.
What's the biggest factor in convincing upper management that they should finally invest in a new CMS and a new strategy that would involve everything right down to YouTube?
That's my question, actually. And it's the one that I like to answer the most. I believe that upper management, if you want to, you know, let's call it the CEO and the C-level, SVP level, mm-hmm. A lot of them get it, and they're smart. Obviously, they're brilliant people. But a lot of times, they view SEO as an ad model. They look at it like it's an ad, like it's pay per click, because you know it's not uncommon that big brands are spending north of $10 million or $25 million a year on Google Ads alone. And so you know, the way they understand search is I pay for something, I get a click, and it comes in. And they know what organic search is. They know what SEO is, but they want to treat it like it's paid search, and it's not. It's really PR. SEO is PR because it's inbound. And it's about creating a perception. It's about awareness, brand integrity, and it's about reputation management too. You know, we have some clients that, you know, get, you know, hundreds of thousands, even millions of visitors each month from what we call their branded keywords. So someone types in their brand name, you know, they Google their brand name, and that, if that first page of search results don't really tell the story you want to tell, you're losing sales. You're losing sales there. You might not.
I've done interviews about this going all the way back 5 years ago to the very beginning, maybe even the very first interview that I ever did with Michael DeRoush. You're telling me that that's still an issue for companies?
Biggest issue.
Really?
Huge. So 80, you know, if you look at some of the studies out there, about 35% of all clicks on the internet that refer traffic somewhere come from organic search. Okay. About 6 or 7% actually come from a paid search click. So about 75 to 80% of all clicks are still coming from organic, right? That's where people click. And people just, you know, people aren't taking advantage of that. It's just, they're not taking advantage of it. They don't think about it in the right way. They look at it. They still look at it as kind of a secret sauce, as being unattainable. It's a SEO is a process. And you have to integrate it throughout your whole company. So the best champion for SEO is the CEO. If you can get a CEO behind SEO, you're working with a company that's going to do things well on the search side.
I think it was AdKnowledge. I went in through a friend who worked there late at night who showed me around the office space, and they just had desk after desk of just phones. Basically, all they would do is call people up and sell them ads. And I'd say, who would these people call? I said, it's easy. We go to Google. We start doing searches and we see who turns up the top, who's buying from Google, and those are our targets, and then we start converting. You know, like, this whole process is just so dead simple, and then they end up with customers who come back month after month to buy from them. What's yours? What's your process for getting all those people who have the old CMSs and who are good customers for you?
So we've invested significantly into our technology division. We started as a technology company. And so technology is very integrated into everything that we do. And we use technology even when we do prospecting. So what we do is we take a look at, specifically we've identified sites that are in that target market that we want to be our customers. And we run diagnostics against those websites to see, you know, how are they performing on page and how are they performing off page. And from the perspective of how many websites link to them, where do they rank for their keywords that they should be ranking for. So we're able to do kind of we kind of call it search mash. It's basically a process where we're able to, by using technology, identify those flaws and those areas of weakness in an automated way. So that gives us the opportunity to say, hey, let's look at kind of this prospect pool and where are those, you know, those opportunities that we feel we can, you know, we can make our customers. And so we find those weaknesses and we let them know about it. I mean,
and do you have software that you're saying you have software that finds the weakness and then gives you the lead?
Essentially, the software is able to, by providing us that data, and then when we do that data analysis, we can discover those opportunities, and then we can make those prospects.
And is it spidering the web? How's it getting all the people into the system?
We have software that spiders the web. We have software that ties into some of the major APIs, like SEO Moz, as an example. And we have software that looks at elements on their website. And we take that software, and we analyze those different components. And we create basically we do some data analysis and some data engineering and put those things together and say, you know, where are the low hanging fruits? And what are the biggest opportunities? And that same software is used, in our actual professional services when we actually start doing, on page SEO analysis or off page SEO and content marketing. We'll actually use a lot of that same technology. It's used in a different manner, but it's still comes back to a lot of that core technology that helps drive that efficiency that, you know, we try to extend to our customers.
So Joe, your software goes out, finds websites that have certain criteria, including weaknesses that you guys want to solve. And then does it spit out a phone number or does it just spit out a name and then your salesperson has to know where to call?
So there's a couple different ways we do it. We do have the ability to import a list into, let's say, Salesforce. And then we do have there are some plugins that we have in Salesforce that'll, you know, help to put some of the information together for us. But mm-hmm. The prospecting process is not an automated one. So kind of finding the prospects is, because we want to know where those weaknesses are. But generally, when we go to reach out to a company, we want to really find the right person. So we'll take a look at the company's the company's leadership. We might obviously go to LinkedIn, and we might just tap into some connections that we already have. But we're going to go and reach out to that person on a personable level. We might offer to come see them in person as well, face to face. But ultimately the prospecting process is a pretty, there's a lot of handholding there, and it's something that, we think really, requires a lot of integrity.
Okay. So can you think of, give me an example of a company that's out there that you didn't get, but your software got all the information about them and you know they're good prospect, but they're not getting it.
Well, that happens all the time. I mean, that happens all the time. And I don't know if I have a specific example. I mean, I hate to even use a specific example because I don't want to throw a brand under the bus. But I'll tell you that
their CTO would probably be happy for you to mention it publicly. And plus, they're not listening to this.
Hopefully not. I think people choose not to make some of the decisions that they know they need to make because they are. I'm kind of answering your question in a roundabout way, but I think it still comes back to the leadership of the business. Does the CEO support SEO? Yes or no? If yes, how much do they support it, and how does that trickle downstream? And what happens a lot of times in big organizations is they end up with one person. They might be a team of three. Sometimes it's a team of five, but it's a drastically underfunded SEO operation that does not have the resources to do the type of championing that they need to do. They don't have the funding sometimes to even get access to the tools they need. And sometimes they have a lot of money. Sometimes they have a lot of cash, but no personnel funding. But what's happening is that they don't have the type of support that they need. So we find opportunities where they can make some simple changes, and because they don't have that support, they know that they're not going to be able to achieve it. And they may just tell us, hey, guys, we know that. We know that this part of our site sucks. Thanks for telling us again, but yeah, we can't do anything about it.
Why so much search engine optimization work and the other work that you do charged on a monthly basis? Why isn't it a set it and maybe not forget it, but set it and let your people continue to manage it type process?
So there's different, depending on the service that we're offering, some of them are like that. So as an example, our content marketing service it's not set it and forget it. It's not as hands-on in terms of the technical consulting that SEO requires. SEO is a very skill-oriented trade where you've got to be super hands-on. And the content marketing to some degree is too, but that's a case where someone could say, hey, I want you guys to develop 10 great stories every month, spend 100 hours pitching it to major trade publications, try to get those stories locked in, integrate us into that story, and hopefully we'll get a link out of it. And so some of those types of cases, it could be more of it's a little bit more set it, forget it for the customer, where we just kind of like keep that work going for them. So it's a little bit of a blend in our services. It just depends on, what the service is, what the type of engagement requirement is, but there's that blend.
In our first interview, one of the best parts for me was when you talked about the challenge about the time when sales were down, where you had to let go of some people, unfortunately, where you and your dad had to move in together and then eat the Kentucky Fried Chicken that was sold just before closing because that's the cheapest. Take me back to the biggest challenge now at iAcquire.
So iAcquire, I mean, we're a young company. Our entity was formed in, I believe, April of 2009. So from a legal entity perspective, we're almost 4 years old. The first year or two were real rap. First year was super rapid growth. We went from 0 to 60, very, very quickly, and built a quick business. And then what happened was, with us is, and this happens is common, to maintain a trajectory at a certain clip becomes very difficult. And sometimes you have to take, kind of one step back to take two steps forward. I believe that we've done a really good job managing growth. But managing growth is something that can be very difficult, and sometimes you try to step on that limb, and that limb is going to break.
And so you grew too fast?
We've experienced that in the past. We've grown too fast. We've been in a position where we've had to kind of slow the brakes down as well. So, you know,
what happens when you grow too fast? I wouldn't think that was a big problem. What happened?
Well, I know that there's a specific issue I would point to where, you know, I would say, hey, this happened because we grew too fast. But I would say throughout the throughout time as we've grown the business and as we've seen, as some of the things that we've tried to launch haven't been successful, let's say, as I had hoped that they would be, or as we've invested into areas of the business that didn't do what we wanted them to do, the speed of growth and where that can affect you really is, you can essentially bite off more than you can chew. I think that's the best way to put it.
So what'd you bite off more than you could chew?
So as an example, we've invested in certain technology platforms that, like as an example, we talked about crawling the internet. So we have a technology platform called iRank, and it's our proprietary technology that does crawl the internet and ties into these APIs. And we've tried to take that thing a couple times to a place where it's hard to take it. As an example, you know, we were at one point crawling billions of pages every month across the internet. And that's really great because you can do some real heavy data analysis. But we found that, we thought that was going to cost, $10,000 a month to maintain. And, you know, we get into it and, it's $50,000 a month. So either I'm going to have to continue to invest $50,000 a month and more as you get more sophisticated about it to maintain the level of data analysis and data mining that we were doing, or you just back off. So that's an example where, you know, we put a lot of money into that project, and we still do it. We still do crawl the internet, but we don't crawl billions of pages a month anymore. We focus on more popular areas of the web. But essentially, you know, that's a perfect example. Like technology in particular, even headcount. We've been fortunate. We've not had to retract any because of the overgrowth on the headcount side. But certainly we've had to suck it up for a few months longer than we had hoped to start to see like return on our own investment internally in hiring certain people or certain departments. So, you gotta be careful about scaling your product lines too quickly. You gotta make sure you put the time in on the R&D up front, understand what that process is going to look like. And I think that's every digital agency experiences that. And it comes down to how well can you manage it? How well can you manage that, that ever changing kind of evolution of services that we're offering, and they change all the time. So you got to be careful about
on the product side. Why do you crawl the web?
Because we want to understand the linking relationship of the web. Because again, with the content marketing and some of the other link building tactics that we employ, it's important that we understand which websites are important in different sectors. So as an example, let's say that I want to sell diapers online. So I need to look for a certain category of moms. That moms that have young children, that are maybe bloggers or moms that operate, websites that, are looking to add additional content, or looking to develop relationships with other companies. And so we need to be able to find those websites in a strategic manner, and then analyze those sites from a linking perspective. How popular are they? So how many other websites on the internet and are linking to these kind of mommies that have these young children, and not only how many websites are linking to them, but what are the quality of those websites that are linking to them as well. So when we crawl the internet, we get this cursory understanding of who's linking to who on the web, and so that's something that that's important to do. And also what we've done is in particular we've tapped into other APIs that are out there now, and I mentioned SEO Moz early on. But there's companies like SEO Moz and Bleko and Majestic SEO that crawl the web and have done a really good job of creating their own what's called link graph, which is a linking graph of the internet. So between leveraging their technology and our technology, it gives us all the different data points that we need to be able to make really informed decisions about the types of content that we're building and the places that we're syndicating that content to across the web.
All right, I'm going to do a quick plug, and then I want to ask you one last question that we couldn't be open about the specific sales numbers, and I don't blame you. We couldn't be open about the specific customers, even though you gave them to me before, and I don't blame you for not revealing customers. This next one, there's no reason why you can't be open about it. So I'm going to do a quick plug, and then I'm going to ask you that question. And the plug, of course, is for Mixergy Premium. If you're a premium member, go and watch the hundreds of interviews that we have. If you're not, you should be. And actually, instead of, if it sounds like I'm giving a half-hearted plug to it, it's because what I really want to tell you guys to do is go back and listen to the previous interview that I recorded with Joe, the one about his the company that he started as a teenager. I just recorded it about an hour ago, and I love it so much, and I'm promoting it right now in this interview. Go back and watch that other interview. All right, here's what I wanted to get to.
I feel like you're setting me up for a doozy right now.
Usually I do that to get people to stick around past the plug to listen to the last question. It was partly a plug here today, but it was still important to keep them around for this. Why did you want to do this interview? Your PR person asked me. So it wasn't just like you were dragged into this. It was an intentional thing. Tell me as openly, be open. Why do this interview?
We're doing this interview because we want to get our name out there. We want to get more mainstream press. As we grow the business, it's important that the company's leadership, myself, my partner, the executives in the company, that we get out there a little bit more, that we start to draw some attention inward, tell people our story, tell people that we even exist. I mean, we're growing rapidly, but a lot of people don't know about us. So we're expanding our wings this year. It's something in particular that it's kind of a New Year's resolution for the company.
How does it help your business to get you and to get Jay Swanson out there, your co-founder?
So it's important that, you know, it's important that not only people know who we are, but that we put a face to the brand. And, you know, our business in our little sector, we're pretty well known, I think. But we haven't done a great job of humanizing our brand. And there's a lot of really great people that work here. We've got almost 100 employees now between our New York office and our Phoenix office. Wow. And so we want to tell people about not just what we do, but who we are, because we think that, going back to what I talked about earlier in the conversation, we think that our agility and our youth in terms of the way we view the internet, we think that it's the people that really are driving that level of innovation and that strategy that we're putting forth for customers. So we want people to know who those people are. And it certainly starts at the top, and then it goes all the way down to the bottom.
And is it because you're hoping to get customers from this, or partnerships, or biz dev or an acquisition opportunities in the future?
I think that it's important to, I think it's important. It is for customer development. Absolutely. And if there's a future acquisition down the line, that's going to be important too. It's very much about getting our brand out there, getting exposure. That's what it's all about. And, you know, that's what we do for our clients, and we haven't done a great job of doing that for ourselves, but we want to change that. We got to find good channels like Mixergy that we can do that in.
See, because there are a bunch of people who I'm sure are listening to us right now who are saying, I've got a successful company. Why go on Mixergy? Or why go on any other site? And I know that partially it's to get customers, but my audience isn't the perfect customers for every business. I don't even know if it's a perfect customer base for iAcquire. Might be, maybe not. But what I hear more and more of is, I do it for biz dev opportunities down the road, that if people who are doing business with me or will do business with me tomorrow are watching this, they'll get an understanding of who we are. And when we go and open the door or try to open the door with them, it'll be a warmer reception that we'll get. Is that essentially it?
I think that's very accurate. For me, it's a platform, and in particular why I like this interview and the setting, the way we've got it set up. It's a platform that I can share with other people that maybe they don't have time to get on a phone with me right now. Not just customers. It could be other PR contacts. It could be partners. It's a platform that humanizes me. It lets me, they get an opportunity to hear me. They get an opportunity to see me in a Q&A environment. So I think that's really for us what it's, why we like the Mixergy channel in particular, is it gives us that opportunity to share those videos.
All right. Well, thank you for doing this interview. I will tell everyone in the audience to go check out iAcquire.com and to find a way to reach out to you, especially more and more what I'm seeing is at conferences, people will see someone who they've interviewed at Mixergy, and where ordinarily they may not want to go over and say hello to someone, they might wait for an opportunity, like when they're up on stage, and wait for them to come off stage and be one of the group of people, or maybe even hope that they'll get to sit next to them at dinner so that they can talk. Well, if you've listened to them on Mixergy, you've got this connection. And what I'm finding is more and more people go and say hello to the guest when they see him at a conference or when they see him at an event. And if you guys see Joe, I hope you say, hey, I saw you on – I don't even care if you give me credit. You can say, I saw you on some website and I saw the interview. But do find a way to connect with him and with anyone whose interview you see me do, because I tend to interview good people. And Joe, thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you all for watching. Bye, guys.